Special Operations Equipment in his sexy new studio. That's pretty cool looking. Also, Jack Spierko from the Survival Podcast is in his sexy new studio. I'm Nicole Soss from Living Free in Tennessee in my sexy STEAM studio that's been here for a few years. The reason the studio exists, John, is because you're like, you really ought to paint that wall black and get a better sign and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, I'll paint it black. And then I went to the store and I chose the wrong color black and they informed me I needed this other color black, which I was like, fine, whatever.
Who told you you had the wrong black?
I don't know. I was like, I want this color black. And the guy goes, what are you doing with it? I'm like, painting the wall behind me. He's like, every other YouTuber I know uses this color black.
Oh. Tricorn black is what you use.
So the guy at like the middle between where you live and Nashville Home Depot is the expert on influencer black.
Yes.
Yeah. That's fucking awesome, dude. Yes. What are the odds he would be there just when you needed him? That's
great. Yeah, we drove all the way there to get our paint too.
Yeah.
Not really. Man, the best person I have dealt with at a Lowe's or Home Depot in probably the last 6 years was about 2 weeks ago at a Lowe's here in Paris. And I just took it in there and they have that little machine where they can just look at whatever it is you want to color match. And man, this kid was so on it. He showed us how to use the machine. And I said, could you do this if the machine computer went down? Could you still do this? He's like, no, we used to have to mix up potions and powders by hand, but he knew all about it. Like he we should actually interview that kid about how they make colored paint because he knew all of his shit, or at least he tolerated all of my questioning really well.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Where I lived, you could donate all your unused paint, and they figured out how to analyze it and create like four colors of recycled paint. And then that was sold at about half the price that you get at the store. So I will admit my Portland, Oregon home is recycled paint beige.
Recycled beige.
Right before I sold it, I'm like, we're doing recycled paint beige as our color.
I've been doing that recycled industrial military green, you know, that all your big power hammers and massive equipment, it seems to all be green. It went from like green to gray and nowadays it's all white. I've been looking for one of those metal desks that everybody threw thousands of them away and I finally got one and it's green sitting over here.
Cool. I wonder what Jack's scrolling there in the background.
I'm looking for topics for today.
Oh, so here's the deal, guys, who are in the live stream. Oh, I know. Radio Made Easy's here. Hello. When John talks to you in his factory at night, if you don't bring up topics, he ends the stream and goes away.
That
happened today if you don't ask us questions. I saw him get on once. I swear he was on 5 minutes. He's like, okay, well, no questions. Bye. Click. And he was out.
Well, it's conversation. By the time I'm doing a live, I've already been up 16 hours.
Yeah.
Like I've already talked to everybody about everything and I just sit there at night and sometimes it's very, very animated and then sometimes it's very, very short. I mean, I could do a lot of other things other than do that live because I really don't sell product or push product. Most of the time don't even talk about SOE specifically.
Right. John did that once on stage. Yeah, he did.
So, John, you actually feature quite a bit more, I think, than you know in my new book.
I did not know. I just knew that my name was in there, and I had mentioned it. And then you're like, actually, that's the first book.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're in that one, too. I mean, really brief mention, but you're pretty heavy in the second book. But what made me think of it is, you know, you're talking about SOE, and I was listening to the virtual voice audio that KDP puts out today, and you are Sue Tactical.
Sue Tactical.
I don't know how you get Sue out of SOE.
Man, I used to listen to audiobooks and they would have narrators narrate that just didn't know the topic. So they'd be like 556 instead of 556 or and you hear it and you're like, this is AI, man. They were doing so, and a lot of stuff that you know is AI, the first 5 minutes is really good.
Yeah.
And then after that, I think that the writer actually only listened to the first 5 minutes and made him fix all that. And he's just like, all right, let it go.
There is a point, like, and what I've said about this with the books is the audio, I can't put a lot of time into it because you don't make crap for money on it as an independent.
Mm-hmm.
You don't make much. Like, if somebody uses their Audible credit, they make like 14 cents. So how many hours can I put into the audio side of it? And the answer is not many. That's the way that works out. They'll get better.
You almost need sponsors within your book. So that because people are lazy and they'll listen to the audiobook but won't read it. So how do you monetize that effort?
That's interesting.
That's a great idea. I'm going to steal it. Is that okay? Because my books have not been launched.
One of the truly genius applications of that formula goes back to a guy named James Talbot Stevens, who I met when I first started the show. And he was on his way out at that point, taking like one more pass around. He sold over 1 million copies of his book. And it looked more like a copy of the Yellow Pages than a typical book. And it was half advertisements.
Yeah.
Well, it was in its seventh edition. But he made more money on the ads than he made on sales of the book. And he made good money on sales of the book.
And it was all prepper stuff.
It was all prepper stuff. It also shaped my entire angle because I met him like 3 months into it. And I looked at all these companies from his last edition of the book, which were all around the whole Y2K thing. So it was 8, 10 years old at that point. 90% of those companies were out of business.
Yep.
In 8 years, right? 8 years they didn't make it. And I'm like, so I can't build anything I do in this space on their model because clearly it's not a one-off. Like, this is a consistent high failure rate. I don't think what you're doing has longevity.
Yeah. So during Y2K, the 3 or 4 years running up to there, they had extended so much credit to all these companies, extended credit, especially the magazines. You had all the gun mags and Survival, American Survival Guide, and those magazines that extended so much credit. And then all those dudes, just business ended, like as soon as Y2K didn't happen. And they had no way to have that revenue coming in. And that's how Nabisco and some of those other companies ended up buying American Survival Guide and all the gun publications, and then they shut them down. And then you saw Backwoods Home got a hold of their client list and started, you know, pushing towards them. It's just like James Rawls, The Coming Collapse. That was probably not everybody's, but a lot of people's first delve into prepper fiction. And as you listen to it now, you're like, all this is just, you know, pushing, you know, friends' products or, you know, products that he had in his head. But the whole thing is just, you know, just talking about all these products and shit and not as much, you know, storyline.
Okay, Second Life Farm says, why not clone your voice with 11 Labs for the audiobook? Jack, is that what you did?
No, and the reason is that it's like the whole free trial thing goes away when you have a 130,000 word book and you have to pay for that compute and the cost of doing it, not counting the time, it would be about $2,000 for the second book to be audio voice clone with my voice. And again, if I could make even break even on that, I might do it, but I don't think that I will. And I don't think that the time it will take me to do it won't, you know, that time can make me money, much more money than it will putting out an audiobook. The other side of this is, you know, I've been doing an audio show for 18 years, and all of you keep asking me, write a book, write a book, write a book. So you write a book, and then what do people say? I want it in audio.
John wants it in audio, right, John?
Yeah, I'd like it in audio.
You can, I mean, the virtual voice.
He's always working. He's got to have it in audio.
Yeah. The virtual voice is fine if you accept some things. You know, like John was saying, like, there's a point I mentioned a 357 SIG, and it's like a 0.357 SIG, right? It'll do something like that.
Yeah.
For some reason, the best voice that I can pick out of the group constantly leaves the S off the word lead. If you say leads, it just says lead. And it will occasionally pronounce the wrong flavor of like a homophone. Like if you write read or red, they're spelled the same way and it gets the wrong one. But overall, like it, if you want to listen to the book, you can.
Yes. Or you could upload it into Notebook LM and have a podcast made about it.
Oh, that's happened. A lot of things have happened with that.
I've been doing that with mine by copying you, because I just apparently copy you too and do the things.
I think authors are underutilizing AI because they see it as hey, you should write for you. Well, if you do that with it, sure. But like, I take Notebook LM and I create a debate and make one of the hosts attack the ideas and the other one defend the ideas. And then I listen to that and then I refine the chapter.
Mm.
Like, using AI as a critic is probably the best tool you have. Like, your friends will never bluntly tell you, look, bro, your shit sucks. Right. They'll always always try to soften it. AI, like, if you tell it to be brutal, it's just like, okay, this is garbage. Nobody's going to read this. This is total crap. You screwed this up here. And then you have to decide if it's right, but at least you're focusing on things that you glossed over otherwise. And I think there's dozens of ways to use it that way.
Yeah. That doesn't involve writing your book for you.
Yeah. 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 And, but there is so I created a creative writing assistant, and there's times where I'll get to a point and I'm like, you get that writer's block. I just don't know where to go from here. I know where I'm trying to get to. I know where I'm at, and I need to transition in this spot. And you can throw it in there and say, okay, give me three possible ways, two sentences that are three different versions of two sentences to go next. And then you read that and you're like, okay, click. And then you go do your own thing. You write your own stuff, but it unsticks you. And I don't see that as any different if I hired some college students to come in and be my editorial staff. What the hell's the difference, except that it's better and it costs less?
Yeah.
That's the way I see that.
Jose is in the room and he's declared me married.
Mrs. Nicole. That's a Southern thing, man. Mr. or Mrs. first name.
Miss.
Yes, Miss. But I'm just saying, that was a weird thing for me when we moved to Florida when I was a little kid, because you called a Mr. by their last name, or a Miss or a Mrs. by their last name. So it's Mrs. Smith, not Mrs. Danielle. Like, that just was weird to me.
Yeah. Okay, we got a question from Kiri. Hi, Kiri. Good to see you on. I got to catch up with Kiri yesterday a little bit on the phone. Have any of you heard about folks growing crops in open air having problems this year? We are having a lot of field failures up here in Northwoods. All farmers using hoop houses are good.
Is it big farm or is it gardens included in that? Is it something chemical-wise, or you think it's something coming from the air? Obviously, you think it's something coming from the air. You think that it's insidious or it's crop overspray? Like, what do we think that is?
I haven't heard about widespread failures here of open air versus covered. But people I know who are doing conventional versus organic are having more of an issue. So the conventional is failing more this year. Hmm.
That I can see, because they're creating their own self-fulfilling prophecy there. Personally, I have never had a year as good as this year.
Same.
I mean, I need to bring in the mango squash of the year. I've literally, honest to God, Nicole, got a Trombuccino that the neck is, I cannot get my two hands around it. And it's about 4 foot long, and it's going to fall on the end the size of a basketball. I've got those Indian snake beans, which I never even get any until fall. Like, they survive the summer, and then in the fall, they start producing. I've got them hanging everywhere, freaking 4 foot, 5 foot long.
I accidentally weeded mine.
I've got freaking jalapenos this year that are like half the size of a beer can. Like, I have never had a year this good. I personally took it as, like, this is the year that all the shit I've been doing, my soil just kind of kicked over. But I haven't heard that at all.
So Kiri says, all growing, small and large, weather and stunted growth are common across our area. I'm wondering if she's getting overspray somehow.
Where are they at?
Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
I'm wondering if it's like we've changed our herbicide in the area or something.
I mean, you could go years without having a problem, and you just get a climatic shift in where the prevailing winds are coming from, and then somebody sprays on that day, and you've got glyphosate or atrazine or got 2,4-D or whatever all over your shit.
And that sounds like an herbicide reaction to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Stunted growth, like, that's literally how herbicides kill, is they create like rapid unchecked growth that also is stunted. Like, the plant literally grows itself to death. sounds an awful lot like cancer, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Just saying, like, maybe we shouldn't be doing that shit, but...
Maybe. I can tell you the food in Europe was amazing. They don't do that shit.
Yeah, their food's great. Their air conditioning, however. Not so good.
That's true.
That I call her Euro Karen, Van der Leon, the head of the ECU, basically their central bank president. She put out this whole thing about, you know, just set your thermostats if you do have air conditioning to like 78 or something and open the windows and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we at our office, we don't have air conditioning at all. And everybody, well, it turned out that like she's on like floor 10 and then there's like a 14 story building they work in and floors 10 through 14 all have fucking air conditioning. But all the people that work for them on floors 1 through 9 have no air conditioning. So it's like nothing new at all under the sun, right? The
air conditioning for me and not for thee.
Yep. And I find somebody proposed something, and I'm always the guy that says not everything's a conspiracy theory, but sometimes it is, right? And so like the thing that they floated is like Europe has like this huge social welfare system. To which pensioners are just a drain. So if you just say you can't have air conditioning because you'll kill the planet, the people that die are old people. And you cull the number of pensioners you have to pay.
Yep.
And I'm like, you know, it might not be intentional, but I doubt they feel bad about it. Because it is older people mostly that die from heat.
Or get them to take a cocktail of some sort that affects elderly people.
Put out a thing that's a bad cold for most people.
That's what I'm talking about.
And then take the old people who are sick and send them to the nursing home with all the other old people. Like,
Yep.
You know. Of course, we did that in New Jersey and New York and Pennsylvania here, but.
How's your garden this year, John?
Say it again.
How's your garden this year?
Oh, I have no garden this year.
You didn't put one in?
No, I have. I mean, there's still tons of stuff growing from last year in the raised beds. I bought some plants and never planted them, and they're growing. I have tons of tomatoes on a plant that was never put anywhere where it should have been. There's peppers out there, jalapenos and stuff in the back, but nothing organized or, you know, worth – nothing pretty enough to take pictures of.
I have a much smaller garden this year because I couldn't physically do it earlier this year, and it actually has turned out better because of that. So that was – okay, next question. Who is from Plumber Mickey? Who is the best referral for information on whole home solar? Power too far from new home site, and they want permission to go over two neighbors' hunting properties. So this is somebody who bought land who's wondering who to talk to in Tennessee.
Oh.
So.
I think you have an answer for that.
Yeah. I don't think Sean Mills has time right now, but you can reach out to him at Hack My Solar. Ryan Steva might be a good resource. Carrie Brown might be a resource. Do you have anybody in your network, John, who's doing whole house solar?
I'd reach out to Tad. He'll do it.
Tad's good.
That's not his thing, though. But Tad will probably know somebody that does that.
Yeah. I don't know who Heartland Family Designs worked with, but she had solar put in, I think.
Tad does tons and tons of videos. He's got the dumbest name in the world for his YouTube channel. It's Taddy Digest, which says nothing about solar or AC. I tell him that all the time. But he puts out tons of content. Brandel films for him once a week. So the videos are good, and there's, you know, information is there for sure. Maybe Tim, Regenerative Orchards. I know he does a ton of stuff. He's doing that entire orchard over there at Tad's place, so he probably has a little insight into that as well.
Cool. Mickey, hopefully that helps you get going. Heartland Family Design says, I'm having a ton of fungal issues. My mullein is actually flowering its first year. Tons of them are across the country. I think that's
there's
really
mullein everywhere right now. Everywhere has mullein.
Harvest it and dry it.
Amanda points it out all over the place.
Yeah.
It grows everywhere except here.
Yeah.
I've really not seen it grow here at all. When we were just in Colorado, it was everywhere. I mean, like places that you're like, how is anything growing here? It's like, I am.
Yeah, it's got that long shoot.
Mullen loves no water and rocks.
Yeah, that's where like blazing. I mean, it's cool up there, but still like blazing sun, like orange denuded dirt, pebbles and rocks, Mullen.
Yep, in riprap and retention, you know, rock and stuff.
Yeah, yep. Sidewalk cracks wherever. Like, yeah.
It's a honey badger plant.
What I've seen different this year climatically here is, one, we had a fairly mild spring and early summer. It's now not mild anymore. It's hot. But we have humidity, and that is not normal for us this late in the year, and it's gross, and I protest. I want something done about it right now. This is bullshit. The one thing you get out of living in this place is that at least it's not humid. This is July, and it's still in the mode where, like, when you get out of a car, your glasses fog.
Yeah, we have that going on.
That's not. That's Arkansas. That's not Central Texas. No, this is wrong. I demand something be done.
Well, it's because y'all are using your air conditioners and it's pumping humidity into the air, right?
That's got to be what it is. And it's making all the people in France die, according to their whatever the hell.
Our air conditioning is 100% making them die. How is our air conditioning making them die again, Jack?
I don't know how it hurts them. I look down on the Europores now. Like, I didn't realize how bad you had it. I'm going to set my thermostat to 66 degrees today just to celebrate the fact that I have air conditioning while it's 101 out. And just
don't
see
you always have your actually thermostat?
No, I usually keep it about 68. A lot of times it's actually I'm more like 72, depending on, like, we just had everything gone over, honestly, on the AC system, including, like, you will level the outside unit so it stops making that sound. There's nothing wrong with it. You will level the outside unit so it stops making that sound because I paid you for it, and it's not supposed to make that sound. And when they did all the stuff they did, we're honestly running the AC at, like, 74 now, and we're just as comfortable.
What do they say? They say AC can only lower the inside temperature 8 degrees. Maybe I have 8 in my head for some reason.
20?
Which just tells me that you should always run your AC, because if I get my room to 60, in theory, by your equation, I should be able to lower it to 52 also.
Yeah. I do believe in not, like, this thing where people, like, they leave their house and they set it on, like, 84 when they're gone. And then, you know, they set the automatic thermostat to, like, an hour before they come home to drop it back down to whatever their comfort level is. I think this is insanity, because once you lose, and I don't know, if you're in Pennsylvania or something, sure. But if you're, like, in the South, once you lose that house for the day and you have that internal temperature up in the 80s, it's going to be miserable until it's time to wake up tomorrow. You just can't get it back once you've lost it.
Yeah. And depending on your system, you're going to get some humidity with the temperature changes as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I do turn up in my other house, like, from 72 to 78. If it's going to be days.
Look, somebody says we're a week late for our first Tuesday.
Yeah, that's not true.
It's not true. You need a calendar, bro. Your calendar's broken.
It was first Wednesday. Wednesday was the first.
Yeah. 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 We are a month late because of me.
100%. Well, John and I had a first Tuesday without you, Jack.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's the best first Tuesday we've ever had in history.
I see.
I was like, well, let's go. He's like, sure. It was a fun chat.
I'm glad you guys did. I didn't know that you did, but I'm glad.
Yeah.
Like that.
I mean, why wouldn't we?
I think you should. And it, like, didn't make any sense to me. Like, by the time I got back, it would have been like a third Tuesday chat.
There was two, and we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Well, next time that happens, if I have more notice, I'll get somebody, a surprise person on that John
surprise
doesn't know who is.
Surprise, replacement. We know, well, it might person. Be a Nicole replacement. I mean, you could go somewhere too, but
I know,
you know, it won't be a replacement. There'll never be an alternate for John.
Because John never leaves.
He doesn't go anywhere, so he will always be here.
He's always running that factory.
I just, like, opened StreamYard one time and he was just sitting there.
Just wait until next week. Just 30 days. It just runs.
John's the only person I know who runs a sweatshop that you have to put a sweater on to go inside of.
We have, we have a cold sweatshop.
You have a cold sweatshop.
I love that, though. That's another example. Like, John's like, I have a warehouse with the thermostat on 68. Like,
yeah. We put a lot of insulation in. Like when we built it out, there was a lot of thought put into it. Like the downstairs main area, the garage is very, very undergunned on AC. But basically we have a box inside a building that is, I don't know, 65 feet by, I don't know, 6,000 feet inside. And we have that insulation on that wall. There's an air barrier of 8 inches, and then there's the outside wall, which also has insulation. And then the ceiling to the upstairs, that's 12 inches, and we put sound abatement, but I had them double that, so there's twice as much sound abatement up there. So it's basic. The inside, we can have it at 65 degrees with 105 outside, turn the AC completely off, and come back in Monday, and there's only a 5-degree gain. The garage is much hotter. Upstairs is much hotter. But that box, that manufacturing floor, it stays within 5 degrees in a couple of days.
And that tells you what insulation is worth in Tennessee right there.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Okay. I've got a quick question about hydration. In Phoenix, temperature is supposed to be 115. What's the best hydration drink for this heat?
I use Redmond's makes a pre-workout, and they make a electrolyte salt replacement that has caffeine. They make one without caffeine, and that seems to work really good. I know we've had guys come in just completely wrecked from being outside, and as soon as they take immediately, it like completely changes them within less than a minute. You see the difference in them.
I think you need as many gallons of gas as necessary to put in your car and get the fuck away from Phoenix.
It's called Relight. It's Relight, and it's Redmond's, the Redmond salt.
Yeah, that stuff's good. I don't think any of the like Gatorade-y things are necessarily where you should be going personally because it's a bunch of crap. Also, habits are important. Like, what are you doing to stay hydrated by having regular intake of hydration, and how are you keeping the sun from hitting your skin directly when you're out there and stuff like that? So, but also what's happening is you're processing so much water that it's sucking vitamins out of you, and you need to think about how to get those back in. And then of course the salt. So
salt is important. I would say, like, if I was dealing with that shit, I would be, if I have to be outside, I'm wearing a Camelback. Because you're constantly rehydrating. I found that when I do that, like when I do have to work out in the heat, I drink way more water that way than if I'm carrying a Nalgene bottle around or something like that. It's so, like, you just grab it and you start pulling water out of it and you don't even realize. And all of a sudden you're like, it's empty. And I put in 3 liters of water. And I have very seldom consumed 3 liters of water any other way. But some level of electrolytes and minerals and vitamins are important. I use a product called Noon, N-U-U-N, and I really like it for that purpose.
Yep.
A hat makes a world of difference. Like I go outside a lot of times. I'm like, I don't need a hat. I'm just going to be here a minute. And then all of a sudden you're there an hour. Or I'm tough. I can chug through this. And then you're like, man, I really feel sunburned.
But, yeah, dude, you got a lot of exposed dome, man. I wouldn't mess, like, when you burn yourself and your back peels, that's not fun. I cannot imagine, like, the top of your head burnt. That has to suck.
I'm to the point where I need to just wear a helmet everywhere I go. I bump into so many things or cut myself. And I've had so many staples and sutures. My scalp's pretty thin. I really should just walk around with like a Pro-Tec helmet or a bump helmet or something.
I bet you could 3D print one.
I was like, I could so.
I have. I've got them.
Yeah.
You could probably put fans on them.
Yeah. Build in AC, John. Like
crayon holders.
Yeah. Brendel showed up with a big ass hat that has a massive umbrella, and I'm like, you're not really going to wear that. He's like, I absolutely am going to wear that.
I can see him doing that.
He's got so many tattoos everywhere that he wants to preserve them. So we'll be out. It doesn't matter if it's 50 or 100 degrees. He'll have a hoodie up on all the time everywhere. It's very rare that
my grandson does that crap.
Yeah, it seems pretty miserable.
I don't understand. Like, is it just straight up masochism? It is a fashion statement. Am I missing something? Like, because you know, like the Bedouin and all that are in the desert, they do completely cover, but I don't think they're wearing hoodies that are thick.
Yep.
They make a hat
I've seen
solar
the hats
fans
with the solar fans. I've seen the the water things you used to see those at water parks and amusement parks where they have them in the lines. They have that built into a backpack where it's just kind of mists in your face.
I bought one of those things you put on your neck with the little evaporative fan in it, and then I threw it away. It didn't work.
Yeah.
I like the one you could put in the icy water cooler that's like a bandana.
Yeah, that works for a, not long, but it does work.
Yeah. Depends on what kind of heat you're in. Okay, question. My thoughts, or any thoughts, on the U.S. intelligence reporting that Russia may push into Poland?
Where are you hearing that? Like, did the U.S. call you this morning? It was like an intel guy? Or are we hearing that second, third, fourth hand? Like, there's so much shit on the internet that you watch now, and it's just circular reporting. Like, and every time it's like telephone, it just gets a little more and a little more. I'm not saying that there's not some report, but I mean, who's it coming from? The chick that's been, saying that shit for 5 years now, or is it coming from CNN? I mean, that's where our intelligence, like if you and I heard something, we used to see it on the news, and then you realize that those are just, that's issued by the government to manipulate people or countries into doing what they want done. I don't know.
I was looking this up.
What about those?
I saw the question in advance, and the main source given so far is the Telegraph. Washington Post, Russian offensive campaign assessment.
Washington Compost.
Yeah, The Guardian.
That's Bezos's wife.
The Jerusalem Post. Oh, okay. So the concept is they're going to do some limited bullshit to test the resolve of NATO. That's what's being circulated, like some limited cross-border strike and then back run away or throw some rockets or missiles at some strategic areas. I find this to be highly uncredible because what benefit is there to this? Like the last thing Russia wants is a more united Europe against Russia. The country that's kind of like, we're really not involved with the rest of you fuckers is Poland. Poland's kind of like, we have our own shit. We do shit our own way. And I don't know, like it just, Russia's not a stupid country, despite what the news says. And Putin tends to do things that benefit him. At least he tries to do that for himself. What is your benefit to pissing off Poland and firing shots at Poland and potentially invoking Article 5 of freaking NATO? Like, how does that help Russia? I don't have an answer for that.
Good question.
But who would it benefit?
Yeah, what about all the I thought a bunch of ICBMs. I thought a bunch of ICBMs just struck Kiev.
Like, may have. Like, in wars, countries shoot at each other. But that's Kiev. That's not Warsaw, right? Like why would Russia attack Poland right now? Like, how would – but my other question then is, who would benefit from circulating that rumor? Or who would benefit if somebody made it look like that happened,
Good question. I got a prepper question in. Keep the questions coming, guys.
Please.
My area of Ontario used to be free of tornadoes, but that's changing. What should we know to prepare, and what's the difference between tornado fear and real day-to-day reality? I understand the second half of that.
You're talking about Ontario in Canada, Ontario?
I assume that's Canada. Yeah.
Man,
so they're getting tornadoes now. How do you prepare? What'd you say, John?
I've never thought of Canada having tornadoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm trying to what's the frequency of this? And it doesn't look like it's like, so we had a tornado or two, right? So like, is it really a thing? Like where I live, we have most years enough tornadoes to where you get kind of tired of tornado warnings, right? Like we live in true tornado alley. A lot of Tennessee is that way too. Tennessee actually has the largest number of people killed by tornadoes every year because it's such a daggone long east to west state. I bet you if you took the total number of tornadoes that occurred in Ontario and factored them in against the odds of actually being hit by one, that the odds would be so infinitesimally low that you would find something else to be concerned about. Though awareness is still a good idea. Basic tornado protocols are, where you live, you may actually have basements. if you go in a basement, you have like a 99% chance you're going to be okay. They always tell us to do that here in Texas. And what's the problem with that, Nicole? Go to the basement when you live in Texas?
Stone.
We don't have any.
There's right. No
basement. Like, it's not just where I live, right? Like,
yeah.
They're just, I have never seen a house with a basement in Texas. I'm sure some exist.
Probably.
But it's very uncommon. So the one thing about northern states is usually you have some part of your home that's either below ground or partially below ground. That's your number one safety issue. We have thought about paying and having a professional installed tornado shelter put in, and that's something we might do in Ontario. I don't think you have enough frequency for that money to be spent that way.
Yeah, he's saying they've gone from 0 a year in his area to about 3, and I don't know if they're category 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, that's a big thing too, right?
Like, if they're not that you want to be outside in the middle of a little tornado, like you don't want to be in the middle of a tornado, but if you're just wondering basic tornado preparedness, have already scoped out in your house where you can go that doesn't have any windows.
Yep.
That's preferably doesn't have any exterior walls. Make sure it's stocked with food, water, some sort of radio comms in case you get stuck in there. And then have a weather radio or something that can alert you of when there's a risk. And then your, sanitation, by the way, in that room. My room's a bathroom, so it's got a flush, which is nice. Yeah. But that's the basic level. If the fear of tornadoes is your problem, I was just talking to Jack about this. Like the news has people in we had Sonny Pazikas talking about sympathetic versus parasympathetic states. It's putting us in a constant state of fear, and reaction, which is sympathetic, which is not what you want to do. So addressing the mindset of fear of tornadoes is much more important. It doesn't mean go out there, as I said, in the middle of a tornado and be like, come and get me. But the reality is you're probably not going to get hit by a tornado. Having some amount, like base level of preparedness is important. Communications is important. But if you're in constant fear of it, what are you missing in life?
Yeah.
While you're afraid of that all the time. It's like when you realize you're mortal and you're going to die and you go through that phase in your life where you're like afraid to die. If you never get past the afraid to die, you miss your life. And how sad is that?
Well, it's the fight or flight. And when you're in that situation or that state, you cannot get rested. You cannot be restful. You do not have recovery of any kind. But you gotta either, you have to dig down or you have to berm. Those are your two options in a storm like that. So you have to put something in and then berm it, or you have to dig down. And I don't know how it is where you're at. Here, we can build a block box that's, metal reinforced, with rebar. Mm-hmm. We can assemble. I mean, you can get storm a pack. They'll flat pack them, I think, even. You bolt them together and it's a steel room. Or we cut a hole in a concrete slab and they put a box in there with flanges and then they anchor it in and chemically anchor it. And then it has a slide top and you can get different sizes. Those, the last one I described, the biggest one that I've been able to find is about $7,000 and they come in and they put them in a couple of hours. And then some of them, they also have a little jack in there. So it will lift it up if you have debris. Now, when you put these things in, you are supposed to register them with your local municipalities. So when the fire truck shows up and your stuff's all smashed, they know that you have a box or something. They know they're looking for survivors and not, bodies in that situation. And then they also go out to those areas typically first to see. So you just need to look into storm shelters. Look on Marketplace in your area. I don't know if you have that up in Canada, but if you look up storm shelter in Marketplace everywhere here, you'll see tons of options on what's available there. Home Depot and Lowe's even sells them and subs them out, and they come in and put them in.
Yeah. I'm going to say this is overhyped bullshit, trying to scare people in Canada after doing like 2 minutes of research while John was talking. It's not a higher than normal season for tornadoes in Ontario right now. 2021 had 56, 2024 had 60. 2025 was a slower year with 19. Ontario is the tornado capital of Canada. Historically has, somewhere in the two digits, somewhere around 40, 50 a year. All the tornadoes that have occurred this year were EF0 or EF1. the most hyped one was an EF1. It was on the ground for 18 kilometers, so about 9 miles, and it did severe damage to 2 barn roofs and snapped several large trees. I don't mean to be all bravado or whatever. We call that Tuesday here. Like, that's like that's just not like. I think Nicole was dead on it. Like, this is another attempt to make you afraid of something so that you'll pay attention to what you're supposed to be afraid of instead of actually thinking for yourself and, like, asking questions like, what the fuck are you guys doing now, right? Like, anything to keep us from looking at them. And so tornadoes is as good a thing as any. So it's actually a much lower year than normal. The tornadoes are not any more severe than typical, and you probably are more likely to get killed by somebody dropping something off a building than by a tornado in Ontario.
On the other hand, I mean, if you're trying to sell this to your wife and that's your sell for your badass gun room, I mean, more power to you. Build it. I mean, build it in a manner that it will withstand a storm. It will have some extra layer of security. Yeah. If this is your forever house or whatever, I mean, more power to you, man. However you want to do it, you could have a lot of storage inside there and a bunk bed and a, you know, little, you know, portable shitter in there. And awesome.
Yeah, I remember using that when Glenn Tate, who wrote the 299 Days books, stuff was part of our forum way early on. And he was like trying to get this bug out location at this lake with this cabin, and it was off grid. And he's trying to sell his wife on it. I'm like, stop saying bug out location. Tell her it's a vacation home.
Yep.
Right? The yuppies have vacation homes. It happens to be a bug out location, too. You don't need to always say what it is, because a poured concrete shelter. Not a bad thing to have for a lot of reasons.
He just got a different wife, and she was completely on board with it.
Yeah. He did eventually, yeah.
Yeah.
Can you find the
South Texan tornado shelter sound like a great way to drown in a hurricane?
It depends.
Pumps, I mean, have it. Build it into the side.
We actually
above ground dome.
Modern Rural Civilian has a incredible YouTube and Instagram. It's all shorts for the most part, but he put a big culvert in and did it as a food storage, and it's very temperature stable. But he's got a whole build series on how he did that. It's very doable a lot of places.
Our like number one way people go down here actually isn't in the ground. They use those metal ones, like you were talking about Home Depot, Lowe's, John, where they come in and they basically attach it to a concrete foundation. And there was one of those they use this for marketing, because I would too if I sold that stuff. But it was an F5 that hit somewhere in Oklahoma. And one dude in the neighborhood had one of these in his garage. And like it looks like remember The Day After from the 80s, the nuclear war movie? The place looks like that. And in the center, there's this big red metal thing that this guy and his family went into. And, you know, they were perfectly fine. Well, I'm sure they were shitting their pants because – it's got to be horrifying, but, you know, that proves if you can withstand an F5, then you're probably going to be okay. Because if it's worse than that, it's, you know, there is a place for fatalism, or like there is our time. Like I had a guy one time say, well, you fly all the time. I'm like, yeah. He goes, what about crashes? I'm like, well, they don't happen that often. Well, what if
I've
it doesn't
been
like,
in one?
Then it's my time. Right. You know? And he goes, but what if it's the pilot's time? I'm like, well, then it's your time too. That's how that works. Like you
didn't
can't
they just have move. Didn't they just have some planes crash and dudes like completely walked away? Like a dude jumped out of the thing in Brazil or somewhere. There was a few of those recently. Can we highlight
jump out? Now I want to hear that story.
Can we highlight Dalton's comment there? Questions we have. We've been freeze drying nonstop.
Oh, yeah, I got
products.
That one. Yeah.
We're freeze drying, we're not freeze drying vegetables. Vegetables don't cost anything. And most people doing freeze drying do not consider their time involved in the prep and the freeze drying, nor the electricity. Not that the electricity's out of hand, but there is electricity to it. If we're freeze drying, we're freeze drying proteins. We're not freeze drying, you know, green beans. I see people do that all the time. I see people mix loads also, which if you mix loads, whatever the strongest taste in there is, the strongest smell, everything's going to taste like all of that. But we freeze dry, you know, eggs and meat and stuff like that. We don't freeze dry. I mean, we have done that. But if you take your time involved, especially any of our people's time, the time to chop up and put strawberries in a freeze dryer, it costs way. I can buy them cheaper than pay the labor to have it done in my kitchen here.
Yeah. There are some exceptions, though. Like, I would say if you've ever had freeze-dried snow pea pods, they're a pretty damn good snack. So, like, if you know why you're doing it, I guess. I personally haven't gotten into the freeze-dried thing because I did the same math you're talking about. And unless I was, like, processing my own beef or something, economically, it doesn't make sense for me. Angie, I mean, most people that do it, what are they doing? They're freeze-drying taffy and shit and making money off it.
Angie did asparagus, and I would never have bought that, but I ate. Holy shit, it's really good.
She sent me some. I'm trying to help her find a niche, and that's one of the niche angles, to be low carb and like a crunchy snack. Because has she given you any of the cream?
Yep.
The heavy cream.
Yep. Holy I have crap. Them on the counter in here.
Those are so good.
The challenge with that has been shipping, so she just tried a new formula for shipping, and it worked much better. The first round of call that we talked about at your place, when it showed up, it was like all crumbles.
Powder,
I don't know why it wouldn't hold it. It doesn't make any sense, but it just...
I think it's shaking around and that freeze-dried stuff. So what I do for Mylar bags is put them in plastic bins. And the only reason I'm using Mylar bags is my hiker meals. So I'd rather have stuff I like. Or if I'm in a car, or if, as John says, it's a protein. But my goal is not to store it for 20 years. It's to have it in my regular cycle of food that I'm replenishing. And then my other way is vacuum sealed in a jar. So this is bone broth.
Okay, cool.
Like John, I do freeze dry some vegetables that I could take afterwards and turn into a meal, but I don't just use that as my method to store broccoli for the winter because I could just as easily throw it in the freezer. It's going to taste just as good, and there's no point in doing all that work and using all of that power unless I don't have a way to put it in my freezer. And then I'm storing more than we can really eat here.
Yeah. You guys need to, you need to check that too. Everybody buys stuff and then puts it in a room that they don't frequently go to or puts it in a closet somewhere. You will have mice. Like, the Mylar protects the food. You have to protect the Mylar. The bucket is to protect the Mylar. The Mylar is to contain the food and keep the, you know, the oxygen level low, or however you're doing it with displacement of, you know, nitrogen or whatever. You will, I promise you. You live. I've never had a mouse. I've never seen a mouse. You will have mice show up eventually, and if you're not constantly looking at that, it's too late. By the time you see a mouse dropping, they're in that shit. Like,
they're in there, and
you better plan for it.
Once they figure out that there's shit in there.
Yep.
Mouses are smarter than you think they are. Like, somehow they circulate like a memo and like, hey, the shiny bag has good stuff in it. And once they get in one, they're going to get in it all.
Yep.
We have gone to, like, all of our feed, we keep in garbage cans, like for our birds and shit, because once they figure out to chew a little hole in the bottom, then it's on.
Yeah. We keep them in those brute force Rubbermaid containers. We keep all of our bags of feed at each location where we're feeding. We've had mice get in there last year, finally chewed through that. And once they're, I mean, we took and patched it up with hardware cloth and two-part epoxy, but you gotta control those mice. By the time they're chewing on shit, there's hundreds, if not thousands of them.
Mm.
And you don't know it. You just think they're not there. I promise you they're there.
Yeah, and they can eat through your plastic bins. Like, I keep my plastic bins where the mice aren't, and they're in a regular rotation. So I can keep an eye on things. If I was trying to keep them from mice, I would do metal of some sort. But yeah, even a metal garbage bin, that, like, that lid's got to go all the way on.
Yeah, but they don't get through galvanized.
No.
It doesn't work. That's got to hurt trying to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, so Second Light Farm says, I've had mice literally eat through 5-gallon buckets. Yeah. We have two.
Rats will chew through concrete. They'll chew through glass. A rat breeds every 1.3 seconds. One male, one female rat. You will have almost 2 million rats exponentially within a 12-month period. Mice are not as bad, but they do. They produce.
And they will eat, and they can somehow smell through that Mylar bag that there's something in there they want. But I like Mylar for travel, and then if I do think I'm storing something longer than a year, I do. But my goal is not storing it for 20 years. I really want to use it up because – to John's point, if you don't check what's in that bag, sometimes you didn't package it right and it failed. And if you're counting on that, that's sad. Or if all of it failed and you didn't know it and you didn't change your practices and now you have 10 years of stuff you've been storing for 20 years, that's a huge waste of space, time, energy, and all of it.
And then when you're doing more bulk, you can put it in IBC totes. They'll chew through IBC totes also, though, eventually.
Yeah. Simple bungee strap. Is that for the galvanized can?
Yeah, you do the metal and it's got the handles. And
yeah,
then the
lid
goes on and you just take a bungee strap and you go under the handle or wrap around it once and clip on the other side. I mean, if they start fucking with that, you'll find it before they get anywhere.
So why did we stop using galvanized trash cans to put feed in and move to brute force? I have a reason. Do you have a reason why you stopped doing that?
Because I had two of them and I only had one galvanized can. The other side is that the brute forces have a perfectly designed little trivet thing with wheels on it that fits on them perfectly and it makes it easy to move them around. So that convenience is helpful. I have never had breach of one of those though.
Our issue is condensation, John.
So the reason I stopped using them is the handles are separate from the lid, and they are pressed into a slot in the lid. They leak. You will go out, and over time, I would open them up, and my whole feed would be full and soaked, right?
Okay.
And it's only recently we were at Walmart. This has been like the whole time I've been in Tennessee, 15, 20 years, these things leak. And as they age, it gets worse and worse and worse. Now, you could two-part it and try to plug it. Only recently was I at Walmart just a couple of weeks ago and looked at a galvanized trash can, and it does not have that on them anymore. So they have them. They've addressed the issue. But for a long time, plus my big dogs, if they learn to knock those lids off. They don't get the lids off the brute force nearly as much. But like Jack said, you could bungee them or tie down or put Velcro on there. You could do all kinds of stuff.
And this also shows like how important context is. Like, so I don't have any of those problems because all my feed stays inside a shop and the shop is weather tight. So it doesn't rain in there. Right. And then I have this big orange critter that eats anything that goes in there. And so he murders mice and rats. That's his job. Yep. He's on the injured reserve list right now though. He's in the house. He got in a fight with another cat, it looks like, and he had a pretty serious injury to his leg. So we've had him on cat quaaludes recently, but he'll go back to his post soon.
Yeah, we keep feed on pallets inside the feed house, and then we stage it at each station where we feed every morning. So there'll be a layer pellet and a scratch, and I have five of those locations, and then I have another one where I have two locations where rabbit feed are.
Yeah.
So some of it is out in the weather.
And I get why you do that. You have a lot more animals than I do. So I feed in one location every day and it's 10 steps from the shop. So,
and well, the long-term time savings of staging your food like that are huge because you can blow through and take care of everybody. And then you do have to occasionally refill them, but it does make it rather than having centralized location and moving it around.
Yep. We just moved 50 pound bags around with the four wheeler. So I'll have 6 to 8 bags on a rack on the four wheel and I'll just stage it as we need it. And then it just lives there. That's how I can do animals in the morning, you know, in 30 minutes.
I would just think that like just GE number 2 silicon would solve your.
It probably would. It probably would.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for so long.
Do any of you have long form content on rodents? I don't.
I'm sure I do, but we never cataloged any of that. I just talked to a camera and it went up every day.
I don't know what you want to know about rodents, like prevention. What?
You have a couple options. You can get a lot of things that eat those, and then you have other things you have to feed and prevent from breeding, or you can use poison, and then your other things that will also eat poison are affected by that. So handle that shit before it gets to a point where it's a problem.
We did have to use poison, but what we did is we got the traps. You'll see them, not traps, they're bait stations. You'll see them when you go to a mall or something. They'll be sitting outside there, and they use two keys like a nuclear code launcher to open them. And then we put them where the kind of animals you would be worried about, your cat, your dog, whatever, is unlikely to get, which is also a great place for rodents. So like if you had a shelf up against the back of a wall with a bunch of crap in front of it, they like to run along that back wall. So setting it back there is going to get them exposure to it. My concern was, so what happens when the rat eats the poison?
Yep.
And then the rat dies. And then the animal finds the rat and eats the rat. And the answer to that was, unless they're going to live on them, it's not going to be a problem. The active agent in the toxin that we use is actually a medication called heparin, which is something to keep your blood. It's a blood thinner. And by exceeding it, basically, they bleed to death internally. Amount necessary to kill a rat is very, very tiny compared to, let's say, a 50-pound dog or something like that. And then I also kind of figured out that they don't really have a lot of interest in eating them once they're dead like that, because they kind of mummify, I guess, is the way they look when you find them. The dog would throw them around but not eat them. So I don't know.
it's a jerky toy at that point.
Yeah. Had to do it for like 2 months. And then what I did is I monitored the bait stations. And like when I first put them out, like the bait was gone in 2 days. And then the bait was gone in 2 weeks. And then a month would go by and they are still bait with no. So then we just stopped doing it. So we only did it when we had a critical period. And that was in the handoff from one cat enforcer to another cat enforcer.
Yeah.
And we didn't replace him, and you didn't realize how effective he was until he was gone.
Yeah, there's a cat cycle here that we've just been on. And when my best mouser retired, which was about a year or two before he died, we had the worst year of mice and rats I've ever experienced in 19 years on this homestead.
Mm.
And I didn't know why. I was like, why all of a sudden? And then I realized you other two aren't out there killing mice. You're like hanging out in my house.
Yeah.
Sleeping. Our latest bottle baby kitten is actually a really good mouser, so that's good. And she's also a good chipmunker.
So I think one of the things that works for me really well is the feed is impossible to get. And then where I do feed is basically out in the open. So any critters that want to partake in that feed, they have to run the gauntlet of being out in the open. So what I just use a cheap one of those folding like tables you get at Lowe's or Home Depot, like we use for the washing stations and all. And we put the feed under there so that when it rains, it doesn't ruin it. And that gives them some shade and all, but there's no cover where we set that. So critters have to go through a field in the open, and they're much more likely to get eaten by a dog, eaten by a cat, eaten by a hawk. And they also know that, so they're a lot less likely to do it. So we're not feeding them and refortifying them when we do that. And then I also feed really early in the morning. And my hope is by the end of the day, the feeders are empty. So then there's not that nocturnal feeding going on. And we take all the crumbs now that are in the bottom of the pellet feed, and that goes in the worm farms. So instead of leaving that dust there, because rats and mice will eat it, and the ducks never will. Mm-hmm. It will just build up into a pile that deep, and they won't do it. We feed it to the worms and turn it into compost. So there's not a lot of feed for them to get. I think that's like one of your things you can do, is make it not friendly to them.
Something else to think about. Everybody wants to talk, you know, rabbits, especially when they're starting. KW cages makes very nice cages. They're very expensive. And then you have cages you can buy from Tractor Supply. And you hear Baby Saver all the time, right? That's the thinner spacing so that babies don't fall through the bottom. I bought some cages from a lady local here. I think I got 12 of them. They're massive. I bought her whole rabbit breeding outfit. And those are all KW cages. And the entire cage is Baby Saver. And I thought, man, she spent thousands of dollars to get these things. What I found was, mice cannot get through those, right? So all of her cages were set up with bowls inside. I'm like, man, this takes so long to feed these. Mice cannot get inside. I've got another 50 or 60 cages up top in my other rabbit area, and mice get in those J feeders. They go right through the wire. They stand there and eat, and they actually sleep at night inside those feeders where the feed is. I can go up there at night with a knife, open it up, and stab and literally kill like 10 mice just by hand almost every night. There's none down here. Also, something to think about with that, snakes cannot get in there. Snakes can get through that other wire and eat babies. Snakes cannot get through that. That Baby Saver wire, it saves babies from snakes more than falling through if the mom does a good job. But it's something to think about if you're doing this and you're preparing for end times or whatever, that stuff right there, nobody talks about that stuff. And that'll keep all the snakes out. It'll keep the mice out. You're not feeding those mice. Where in my other area, there's mice all over. We see king snakes up there. We see, and I actually leave them up there. Them eating a baby here or there versus the amount of mice that they eat is tons of them.
Yeah. I have a love-hate relationship with rat snakes here because I love snakes, but
they'll
eat some eggs.
They will eat some eggs.
Bro, will they? I think I have the potential to produce a world record Texas rat snake. I really do. Some of the ones that have come out of there, it's like, bro, you have to be pounding like 6 duck eggs a day, and this is an animal that needs to eat like once every 2 weeks. And they just, I mean, the girth on them, like, and they're mean as shit too, but the big problem is they stink.
They stink
so bad.
Yeah,
when you catch them or whatever, they just immediately like musk, and it's nauseating. It's so bad.
Yeah, we've caught them with 6 eggs. We see them in the places where the chickens lay eggs, other than nest boxes. We had something weird happen when we had all the quail over here. I would come in, and the quail would be dead and just covered in slime, and that's what was happening. The snake would get in there, eat a quail. Couldn't escape, so it regurgitated. And it ate 4 different quail each night in a row till we finally caught that thing. But they'll do that for sure.
We had one take out a duck this year that was like a half-grown adolescent, and it couldn't do it. You could tell it was killed by a snake because it was, you know, those rubber chickens the comedians used to use? Like, it was stretched out like that, and it had gunk like all over the head and the neck.
Yeah,
so it had made it up to about the shoulders, and at that point it like had to give up. It's like, I can't do this.
We had a chicken sitting on eggs, and I was doing video every day just showing her progression and lifting her up, and came out, and that's what had happened to her. Her neck was all stretched out, covered in slime. I have videos of all that on Instagram for sure. Olivia asked about hair sheep. Do any of us have any experience with hair sheep? Nicole definitely does. I have hair sheep. You can do St. Croix, Katahdin's, whatever you want. You see a lot of mixes and stuff. But what you have, Olivia, very close to you, is Dr. Barry, and he has 100 or so. He has St. Croix. That's where my sheep came from, was from Dr. Barry, Ken Barry. He's got a channel called OB Farms. And you should, if you're thinking about doing sheep, you should check out Shepherdness. And she breaks down all the math. She's done a ton of stuff with Joel Salatin. She kind of apprenticed under him a little bit, and they've done a lot of videos together. But math-wise, on everything she's done, and she's done cows and everything, sheep is her most profitable, and she breaks it down very, very well.
Yeah, we love running sheep here. We are hilly where we are and rocky, so the fencing has been a challenging learning situation. We are doing an electric sheep fencing class in August here to show you how to run fencing in this particular Tennessee environment, including strategies for running like permanent lines that you can cross section over time, which saves a lot of time. But if where you are is hilly, sort of, and if you're closer to John, then it's a little less hilly than here, but you still will have difficult ground to put step-in posts in if it dries out, which I know it dries out there. Definitely look at that class. I know that the big question here being goats versus sheep, those are two different animals. Goats are even better at getting out of fencing than sheep are. They're particularly adept at it. But the bigger question is, which one do you like eating? Because if you're doing a meat production, are you doing it to make money to sell it? Are you doing it to eat? Are you doing it both? If you're doing it both, then definitely, or just to eat, look at what you like eating. Go out to somebody's farm and see how running sheep looks like. Budget 2 to 3 times the time you think it's going to take after doing that for your first couple years, because everything takes a little while for a learning curve. If you can apprentice somewhere, that's helpful. And then you're going to also want to learn how to do some of the basic sheep first aid sorts of things, or you could just let them die. That's fine too. That's a different approach. We have a line where if an animal, because we don't raise that many sheep, so losing one is costly to us. So we will intervene on an animal, but then that animal is going to get processed. That's sort of our, and it doesn't pass on its genetics. We actually have a flock we bought that has been a closed flock the whole time and came down with a disease that's not preventable and not curable. called OPP, which basically was had to be present in someone in the flock anyway. So we had to decide what we're going to do about that. Are we just going to raise them anyway or what? Well, with my survival of the fittest brain on, we tested everybody. And we already processed the one we knew had it, plus anybody who looked like they needed to be processed because of age or body condition. And then we tested the rest. And the good news is I only have one with it right now who's being processed. But that, you know, like knowing some of those things is helpful. But also if you're getting animals, we were super lucky to discover we had it in our existing flock, which I've been like no vaccines, nothing, just rotating and keeping them. I was about to bring in new genetics and I had the other animals in quarantine and then there was a symptom, tested her, she was positive. So now I have two flocks, but I didn't mix the new ones with the ones who might have it. So also learning how to do testing. I learned how to do jugular blood draws this month so that I can pull the blood for the testing from my own sheep and not pay $30 to $50 an animal for a vet to do it. So that's probably more of a brain dump than you wanted. I will say this. We love what they do for pasture rehabilitation on our rotation. Spending more to source genetically strong animals like Dr. Berry's, if he's selling any, is totally worth it. And finding other sources to mix different bloodlines over time for genetic strength is helpful. John's sheep that are there at this point, he's been doing survival of the fittest, are going to be really strong genetically, I assume. And learning how to integrate it into your cooking is important if you don't already cook lamb. So just learning how to cook lamb is important. Like if you don't like medium rare, then don't do it.
Yeah, she's got the property for it. She's got an actual Sweet. Farm they just bought.
Oh, awesome.
Just know that once you start putting animals on your property, things like travel get a lot harder to do.
She knows. She's a horse person, so okay. Caring for sheep is nothing. Horses try to kill themselves every time you turn around.
Yeah.
They are delicious. That one I took half of from your place, John. We cooked that leg here. Nicole stuffed it full of garlic. It was one of the best things I've ever eaten.
Yep. Yep.
There cannot be too much garlic in a leg of lamb.
No, yeah, there's no way to do too much garlic, and you really got to try to use too much rosemary. You can't. You got to try.
As Jack said, check out Greg Judy also. Shepherdness spent a lot of time with him and doing videos and stuff with him also. She's got it all in a package that's very, very present. Like if you wanted to start a sheep business, like, any agriculture business, I would start there. Salatin's got everything, but she has it presented like as.
Yeah, I really like her channel. Double star that recommendation, John. We've learned a ton from her. Okay, here's a question where my answer before showing you the question is why not both? Jack, you want to read that question for me?
Is notebook LM better than chat? Should I switch? They do different things. That's like saying, should I play football or basketball? They're different games that involve sports, right? So what I would say you might want to do, because this is what I've done, is upgrade Gemini to where you get more power out of Notebook, and then maybe Gemini is your alternative to ChatGPT. But Notebook LM is a very specific tool for a very specific purpose. And it doesn't do a lot of the things that a ChatGPT or a Gemini or a Grok or a Claude would. So you could have chats with Notebook, but it's more like I put this material in and I'm asking about this material that I put in. So Notebook makes some really great like podcasts using AI voices, and there's a lot of different ways to use it. It also is great for building things like presentation decks, review decks, things like that, or infographics and things like that, but it just isn't, it's not the tool that an LLM is, but it does have a really slick integration with Gemini.
My philosophy has been try them all and find out what they're good at and use what they're good at.
Yeah. To me, like Gemini, I get better results from GPT. I can customize easier. Notebook, I can do things with that neither do. I used to use Midjourney for graphics, and since right about the time of your workshop, when ChatGPT integrated their new graphics tool, done. Like, that's it. It's It's everything that was good about Google and everything that was good about Midjourney in one place. And I think that's something that's going to happen for a long time now. Like, you're going to have this methodology you use and this combination of tools you use. And then somebody is going to be like, you know what we should do? We should make our thing work the way that thing does, plus what we do good, and people are going to consolidate. And I think you're going to see a very similar pattern to what happened with search in the 90s, right? Like, remember Lycos, AltaVista, Ask Jeeves, right? And we ended up with Google and then maybe some privacy niche stuff, right? And then Microsoft changing its name every 5 minutes, Bing, MS Search, whatever.
AltaVista was the one until Google replaced them.
Yeah, AltaVista was probably the best results. And there was one called Dogpile. And in the early days, Dogpile was really useful because it was a search aggregator, and it would search like all of the 10 top search engines and then aggregate the results. But that's when it was hard to find things, right? You're talking like 1998, you know? And some of these little ones like Hotpot, Lycos, et cetera, they weren't so little. They had freaking Super Bowl commercials. Lycos had a Super Bowl commercial. Ask Jeeves had a do these things even exist? I haven't even checked. And I think we're going to see that with AI. Maybe you'll have more players in the end, but I think there's going to be a lot of consolidation. And I think that's why everybody's working so hard to build the installed base, because once somebody really likes a tool, it's very hard to get them to move. It's hard to get somebody to switch bank accounts, but getting somebody to switch something that has a lot of data plugged into it already, that's tough.
Yeah.
And I think that's the big battle right now, is to try to get that installed base and make as much of it as you can immovable. And then there's people that take our approach, Nicole, where like, do you use Notebook? Yeah. Do you use Gemini? Yeah. Do you use Grok? Yeah. Do you use Claude? Yeah. Do you use GPT? But I think we're 1% of the users that move around like that.
When I'm on Google just looking for whatever it is I'm looking for, the first almost half the page is paid ads. Like if I'm looking for a restaurant, fine dining near me. The first four things aren't anywhere near me. It's just there because somebody paid for it. But then I go, when I don't find the result that I want, or I think there's something more, I use the little AI, the Gemini thing up there, and it gives me a completely different set of answers. I've recently been looking for some large sewing machines that really don't exist, many of them. And when I asked a Gemini, you see it search through Facebook, X, Marketplace. It searches all of them and it finds them. And I'm like, now which one is closest to me? And show me photo. Like, it does all of that shit. You just have to, and if it doesn't give you the answer, ask it backwards. Like, the answer is in that thing.
That's good advice. Ask it backwards.
For real.
This is what's going to happen. You're going to use it whether you plan to use it or not, because what John's saying, like, it's going to be integrated into everything. When you go to YouTube and run a search right now, you're only getting so much of like an algorithmic AI component to it. But you're going to get to a point where, like, when you're looking for something on YouTube, you're going to be able to have a tool curate the videos you see instead of just be like, here's all the ones we say are good because people watch them. AI is being integrated into your phones. It's being integrated. It will be integrated into things like appliances and shit in the future. Like, that was always the dream, is to, like, when the, you know, of course it gets abused, right? So like, there's this thing with HP printers where you have this automatic ink, and if you cancel it, the ink that's already in your printer stops working. Do you know about this?
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, you have this ink subscription and it's got a chip in it and your computer's networked. So then you say, well, I want to switch to buying my ink one off, and you have like a half full reservoir.
It's like, sucks to be you.
And it just won't work. Like, and so you're going to have AI doing shit like that. Like, you'll get on the subscription to have certain things replaced, and then if you cancel it, then what you have won't work because it's a subscription. Like, but it's going to be everywhere. And if you don't, that's why I'm so big on learning to use it. If you don't learn to use it, it's going to use you, and people are going to use it to use you. And so you need to be cognizant of what's going on. And I think we're getting to where it's harder to detect if it's AI or not, but people that have been using it for 3 or 4 years, we can still detect it instantly.
Instantly.
I mean, the second, like, you don't even read it. Like, you just, like, I see the footprint. Remember in The Matrix, the one dude that was like, you know, I don't even see code anymore. I see, like, blonde, brunette, redhead. Like, I don't remember which guy that was. I think it was the one that ended up being a turncoat. But that's kind of how it is. Like, you just look at the content and you go AI instantly. And that's not necessarily bad, but at least you know, so you know what you're evaluating. Like, if you want to see bad AI content, go to LinkedIn. just go to LinkedIn and start scrolling a feed. And like every other post is like just complete garbage. And most of them are posts about how to use AI so you don't create garbage. And the post itself is AI garbage about not using AI to make garbage.
Somebody took a course and it told them to do that every day to build their following on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And you know, to this question, Tori, which should you pay a subscription for? I don't know. Which is moving you forward? That's like a you thing.
GPT subscription for the moment. What was she, put that back up.
Sorry. Here it is.
Okay. Cancel GPT. Are Claude and Gemini subscriptions a good idea? Like, again, like, what do you want to do? Like, Claude seems like people that want to format things and code things seem to love Claude. People that want a general purpose tool seem to prefer GPT. People that want larger spreads of accuracy and research and deep think seem to really like Gemini. So like, what are you doing? Like, if you said to me, what router should I buy or what router table should I buy for woodworking? What are you doing? Right. That would have a like, and how often do you use it? Right. Like, I'd be much more worried about longevity if you're setting up a hobby wood shop and you're going to be making production runs weekly than if you need a hobbyist, like, I'm going to use my router table like, you know, once a month. I'm a lot less concerned about longevity. So I think you need to figure out what are you trying to do and then what tool works best for you. And I say, you like, do what Nicole said, use them all. And the problem, I saw somebody here said, I use all the free ones. Okay. The problem with that is a lot of the free ones don't really give you a good indicator of the capability of the tool set. So what you might want to do is go ahead and pay for three subscriptions. Use all three of them simultaneously and then figure out what works best for you and then narrow down to that because you are the one with your workflow.
And Cowork you cannot get without paying for Cowork on Claude, which is the thing that makes Claude better for some people who are using it to do things.
Like the stuff you were talking about, managing your homestead with it, is that what you're talking about?
Well, I made a database with Claude for that, but yeah.
Okay.
But yes. Cowork is, I'm just getting into it now, and it does some of the things GPT does with like monitoring your emails and helping with that, which for me is a big deal. But I haven't even touched the surface on what Cowork can do. And as I get in there, I will decide if I keep paying that subscription. I've actually turned off GPT and gone to Claude because GPT is not as, it's not as useful right now.
For what
and I don't care about for what I'm specifically doing at this time this year, and then I'll go back to whatever I need.
Yeah, that's what I'd say to do. I personally, like, the ones I've kept paid subscriptions for of all I've tried are Gemini and GPT, and I have, like, the expensive Gemini one because I was doing so much notebook work that it gave me higher limits per day. I may scale that back right now, but right now I'm really, really impressed with it. I think – long term, it's hard to bet against Google. Like, I think that right now GPT has the more Swiss Army knife, like does the most things. Claude is very niche, but long term, Google's got money and resources and people and programmers, and they're pretty solid on development. And so we'll see where it goes long term. And then somebody's asking about Grok. I use it too. I don't know. I don't find anything. I think the people that like Grok like that it's maybe a little less biased in certain areas, but that's really not what I'm doing for a living. So the fact that it's maybe less biased with climate change narrative bullshit doesn't really help me produce a better show or write a better book.
Yeah.
NecroKitty says he or she has AlphaGal.
Oh, I've seen another one up.
I've seen several people saying and interviewing people saying that they have cured that or freed themselves of that. Zach from American Homestead, we've had him on, met him several times. He's interviewed several people. So if you have AlphaGal, I would check out American Homestead and watch those interviews and then chase that a little bit if you're interested in it. I don't have it, so I haven't paid much attention to it.
I think 2 weeks ago he put a whole episode up step by step what their anti-AlphaGal prototype has been and how to do it. And how to dial it in for yourself and who to work with on the medical side for some of that. And I thought it was really helpful.
I remember Ken saying, Dr. Barry saying that in most cases it does resolve itself over time, that it's not a permanent condition for most people.
Yeah.
But it can be a long, like, you know, 18, 24 months.
Well, and he was saying eat a lot of oysters. Like he was basically going down the carnivore road with that, yeah. And to get your fat balance in, oysters are a really good option. Last time I heard him do a segment about that, but that would be another one. Look at what he does for talking about alpha-gal and curing it, and if it's possible.
But who said that? Was it this other person you were mentioning, or Ken?
Ken said the oysters. Zach from An American Homestead has a whole protocol that he's done with, I think it's his new wife, or I don't know, or maybe it's just a friend, but she's had it for like 20 years undiagnosed, and then moved to the U.S. from overseas, and then they started doing protocols here, and she's been having some success. Okay. So, yeah. I have a friend who had it for 20 years, and he got it in Memphis area, and one day it was just gone. So time healed his, and it could have been gone for a long time, and he just didn't test it.
That's how you know, right?
Yeah, right. Like, you can get a blood test that finds the antibodies in your blood, but the bigger question is your body reacting to those? Like, we might all have it, and our bodies are able to ignore that protein, basically. We don't. I wouldn't have a reason to get that test.
I think that's more likely than otherwise. Like, almost all these things, all these diseases, illness, conditions, whatever, when you dig into them, it's like, well, you might have it and not know it. Maybe I shouldn't worry about it as much as you tell me to.
Right.
There was a new thing that's a tick-borne illness. I can't remember what it's called now, and it's new and it's deadly and whatever. Like, well, the first known occurrence of it was in the 1950s, so it's not new. And then it was like, if you come down with this syndrome, it actually does have a pretty high fatality rate. But like, most people that get it never knew they had it. And like, this just, that pattern just seems to repeat so frequently, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Everything they tell us to be afraid of, like, you know, 90% chance if you get it, you won't even know it. I'm kind of not worried as much as you wanted me to now.
Yep. This person's had it for 5 years and been on full on carnivore through that. So yeah, Rocky Mountain spotted fever is another tick-borne illness you can get. But then the other thing is this question, is alpha-gal a regional thing? It's associated with the Texas Lone Star tick. So where that tick is where you're likely to find it. So insofar as that makes it regional, it's regional in that way at this time. John has nothing to add to that. Okay, question. Any of you guys ever successfully raised turkeys? So John's raised chickens that ended up as big as turkeys.
I've had turkeys, a lot of them.
We bought 10 this year and have one that's left alive. We literally had two of them drown in a puddle.
So we had birds drown this year that were hatched here on their own. We started with 14 guineas, and one morning, seven of them were in two different water bowls drowned, which I've never seen happen ever before. We had 20 turkeys last year. Because I let them grow up, like, we never even slaughtered them. I finally had a guy come and he bought them all. But Nicole has done a lot of turkeys. We went to a turkey processing class at Nicole's place, and those turkeys were massive.
Those
were really big birds.
I mean, my experience with turkeys is after they get over 2 to 3 weeks old, they stop killing themselves everywhere as much.
They're Mack trucks after about 6 weeks.
Yeah.
They're really stupid when they're babies. I've raised several runs of them, and literally you might have to teach them to eat when they're babies, because poultry do mimicry. So like, you get these poults, like if you have them shipped in, they're hatched and sent straight to you, and they've never been around other turkeys. If one of them eats, they'll all eat. If nobody eats, literally you take your finger and pretend to eat the food, and then they kind of look at your finger and look at what you're doing, and they kind of peck at it, and they're like, oh, and then they go, and then they will try to kill themselves in a brooder really hard for the first 3 weeks. And then you need about another 3 weeks. So then they get up to, like, you know, the size of a small chicken. And then, you know, unless something really bad happens or something kills them, they're pretty good. However, sometimes the gobblers, as they start to mature, will get really brutal in the way they fight with each other. And then sometimes they'll get really brutal with the heads. So you end up having to like create sectioned off areas and take your troublemakers away. And if you do the broad-breasted, like I know with everything, you go to the turkey for Thanksgiving, you go to the store and a big bird is like 18 pounds. You raise those things 6 to 7 months, they're big.
Like over 30 pounds big.
My biggest tom I ever raised, the carcass weight, so I'm talking, you know, just the carcass, 54 pounds. One breast cutlet that came off that, 11 pounds on one side and like 9.5 on the other. They actually have like a right-handed, left-handed thing going on. So like you got a half a breast that's the size of like a small brisket. And so to me, they are some of the best and easiest meat you will ever raise. You just got to get them past there. And then the other thing is, it's great to raise these really big birds, but there is a point where they will start plowing through so much freaking feed that you'll never get your money back. And you know, cutting bait around like probably like your gobblers, your biggest live weight around 40 pounds, which is going to give you about a 30-pound bird. And that'll put your hens in like the 28-pound live range. So you're still looking at like an 18 to 20-pound hen. They're plenty big. And if you let them get bigger than that, you have to cut them up. They won't fit in an oven.
It's the same with the Cornish. Same with the Cornish cross. Like we kept them as pets. We let them go a year.
Yeah.
We had dead weight 24 pounds on a Cornish cross. I had two that would get upside down like a.
You had to turn them over.
And I'm like, oh man, he's finally dead. And I just bump him with my toe, turn him over, and he just go running away. But with turkeys, I keep baby turkeys. I get them the same time I get. Chickens, so they're in the brooder together. Oh, so maybe I've never had a problem with them learning to eat. And then we keep them inside for a couple of weeks, and then we put them in a tractor outside, which is caged in, so they have protection. I've kept turkeys that were 2 and 3 years old. Every time I've had a really really big turkey die, it's always with a thunder and lightning storm. I don't know if they get struck. Or they just, I don't know if that thing about them looking up there, or their heart just stops. But I come out after a massive storm and that big, beautiful bird is just dead. We've had that happen with royal palms. I've had it happen with the big white ones, the ones with the big, blue, beautiful heads, all the heritage birds. And every time we've lost one of those big toms, it's always right after a thunderstorm.
So I think something people do with turkeys is free range them with their other free range birds. And I have much lower survival rates when that happens versus at least keeping them in an electronetted area on my property. Jack has really good fences at his property and is functionally keeping them contained. And I think that's another thing that can go wrong with turkeys is too much freedom and they go kill themselves.
Well, if they do manage to fly over a fence, because they just flew and the fence was there, they do not have the intellectual capacity to fly back over. You'll literally see them looking at the fence and then they just wander off. Like, we did have a few when they get that juvenile stage, they can actually fly. And then once they put more weight on, they can't. And it's in that point we've lost a couple that went in the back and never came back. The other thing I'll warn you about, you can get to where they're a little bit hard to kill emotionally. Because the flock will like decide you're the head turkey and they'll like hang out with you. Like you'll be doing something. You get that feeling something's looking at you and you look and there's like this freaking 35 pound turkey like over your shoulder. Like, what are we doing? What's going on? And I mean, to the point where we have these things, I don't even know what they're called. We call them beggar's lice. They're like these little seeds that are sticky and they get in your hair on your legs. They get in your socks. They get everywhere. And I would get them stuck in my socks and you can't pull them out. And I would like call the turkeys over and I have like these 10 turkeys like picking these seeds out of my socks perfectly. No strings coming with them at all. Like I have my own little turkey army. And then, you know, it's about Thanksgiving and you start selling them off and you start whacking a few of them. And it's like a chicken, like, I don't know. Like the turkey tends to seem like it's smarter and it develops an affinity for you. So just be aware you're going to have to deal with that.
Same with sheep.
Yeah, I can see that. Or pigs. Pigs can get very attached to a person.
Well, we've started dispatching here by slitting their throats this year, which is a way nicer way for a sheep to go than the other way.
Okay.
From a trauma standpoint, but that's even more emotionally difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean.
Yeah.
That
right.
Worked.
I'm not saying certain words right now in case any of you have strikes at this hot minute.
Yeah. And that's why it's just.
Yeah.
The audio only people can figure out what that means.
Exactly. and that's, you know, I'm glad we've learned that method, and it is definitely my preferred method at this point.
Really?
But yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, the meat ends up a lot better.
Really?
Yeah. And the meat was good before, as you know.
Yeah.
You had that half one from John that you wish you had bought a cooler and gotten the rest of that half one.
I really do. I still regret that I only brought half.
Yeah, we should go visit John and process an animal.
Yeah, I got some extra boys.
Yeah,
but even when it's completely lights out right out of the, like, they have no idea it's coming and just gone, it's still better quality when you do a bleed.
Yeah,
out.
because the heart pumps everything out of the meat and lungs and organs, and it's. It's just a step up in quality. And then also there's not even an instant of what was that. They're just like, they just fall asleep. It looks like they're falling asleep, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've done enough birds. So I know what you're saying.
Yeah. So, yeah.
All right.
Everybody stopped asking questions. What's up with that?
I don't know. They don't want us to do anymore.
They don't want us to talk anymore?
I guess.
We could talk about the official uniform of today's show. And
John didn't wear
it. The one who's the rebel who's not wearing it, who should be wearing it.
Well, you guys got those shipped to you a little later than I realized had happened. So
okay.
That shirt is 2 weeks ago. You guys got like 3 weeks worth of shirts all at once, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love them.
I just got two. Just like a couple days ago, I got two.
Well, we didn't send you the pink and Tiff blue one.
The pink
one.
And blue one.
We didn't
yeah.
think you'd wear
no.
it.
No, I got this, and I got the one you're wearing.
Yeah, yeah. We reran these. This is like we almost never rerun a shirt. We've rerun this shirt 4 times.
People love that shirt.
I love it.
Every time I wear it, they're like, "Oh, that's a great shirt," and then they read it.
And then little old ladies want to talk to you about how their son works for the post office.
Yeah. I think the one you need to rerun, John, is the two, actually, the Constitutional one and the Second Amendment one.
All right.
The look of those shirts, not just the content. Like, those shirts look freaking smart, man. They just look good.
Yeah.
They're a good fashion play. Plus, they're good content.
We're going to redo the pine tree flag, the pine flags all.
Yep. That's fun. All right. Well, it looks like questions have stopped, and I don't feel like debating the finer points of the empty mall in D.C. this weekend.
Yeah.
Do any of you?
No, I don't know what we're even talking about.
Oh, there was a big 250th celebration in D.C. that was not well attended.
Wasn't there a storm or something? They were pushing people out or something?
There were like 300,000 people there when they shoved everybody out the door because of the storm.
Yeah.
And about 150,000 came back. I wouldn't call that empty.
It wasn't empty. It was emptier than they had hoped. And it was also 4 million degrees outside, which is why they shut it down for the hot part of the day. Like, they were like, don't come back till this time because they were afraid people were going to die of heat exhaustion.
And then when people came back, they said, you can't come back because there was a storm. And the fact that anybody, like, when did he speak? He spoke at like midnight on the East Coast.
That was not a lot, I think.
The fact that anybody was there is actually pretty impressive to me. I mean, if I would have decided I wanted to go to that, and you would have kicked me out around 6 o'clock and said, come back at 11, I would have been somewhere drunk in a hotel room.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you can't go out to eat because there's like 500,000 people in town, and everything's like, I would have left. I would have never went back.
Yeah. You want to show us that media thing, Jack? Because that was hilarious. John hasn't seen that yet.
Which one was it?
The one you showed me about quality and reporting. So John, we were kind of talking about what to talk about today, and he's like, let's talk about quality of media reporting. And
there
he pulled up this chart that's amazing about the weather. So check this out.
Yeah.
As soon as he figures out how to share it. There you go.
There you go. I have to explain it to people that aren't in the video. It's a week-long heat forecast, and it's a bar graph. And it's 92, 92, 92, 94, 94, 92, 92. And the two 94s are like this exponential, off-the-chart leap. Like, we don't hate the media enough. That's my only position here. We need to hate them more. They are worthy of our contempt and hatred because of shit like that.
They need to turn it into something more than it is so that you will pay attention to it.
Yeah. I mean, the Weather Channel used to be great. Now the Weather Channel, everything is a freaking dark red map, right? Everything's dark red. You're going to die. And you're like, what is this? And it's like a half inch of rain. Like,
well, because nobody listens to him anymore, right? It's Ryan Hall, y'all. And for the last 3 years, Ryan Hall, I would turn into that shit. Amanda had me moving shit around and getting ready for tornadoes to wipe us out. And then nothing happens, right? And it's that It's that cry wolf, cry wolf, cry wolf. And to hear those and like or Canadian prepper, right? Nate, like every video he puts up, the world's coming to an end. This is World War III. The nukes are launching.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's those storm guys too now.
I hate that shit. Like everybody's doing it. It's not just media. It's also some of the alternative media like you're saying. Actually have something, no one listens to you. I just got this morning an alert on my phone, like a news station alert has arrived from the Fox WAP weather thing, right? And like deadly heat on tap for Texas. And I open it up and it's going to be 91 in Texas.
That sounds nice.
In July.
That sounds really nice.
That sounds typical. Like,
Normal.
It made it sound like this huge, you know, heat dome bubble was coming to murder everybody. Like, the fact that we've only had a few days in the hundreds this year, this is a mild summer for us. It still sucks, don't get me wrong. But it's the way they do this shit, it's contemptible. And the only reason they do it, though, is because it works. And I think that we have suppressed over the last 50 years the average IQ. Like, we have continually pushed it down. And I think it's – I don't know. Maybe we need, like, a new way to evaluate that. It's like the person is otherwise intelligent. So if you actually put them down into, like, where you're just solving puzzles or something, maybe their IQ is, like, 100. But they behave like somebody with a 75 IQ when it comes to propaganda. Like, they have been so conditioned to believe something because it's on a screen or because some perceived authority figure, they just – take all their actual capability of independent thought and they just turn it off, like willingly, is what it seems like to me, because this shit shouldn't work. When you put up a graph that shows the difference between 92 and 94 looking like it's a 100-degree rise in temperature.
It's not even significantly different.
It's not. No, I guarantee you.
Yeah, that's 1 degree Celsius, basically. It's 1 degree.
It's like the difference between 308 and 306, right? It's meaningless in the field, right? Like, it doesn't matter.
Jack, turn your head.
Either
Jack,
way.
Turn your head, Jack. There's something crawling up your wall. It's big. Other way. Other side.
Holy shit.
I don't know what that is. It used to be the heat advisory warning, right? And you'd hear that, you know, the heat killed 8 people. Well, yeah, Martha was 100 years old. Did the heat kill her, or was she going to die anyways and it happened to be hot?
Yeah, or I don't know. We also are less resistant to hot because we're not exposed to hot. So does it matter to pay attention to what the temperature is? Of course it matters. But it's, you know, also there are stupid decisions you make that lead to problems physically in the heat. Like doing all of your farm chores between the hours of 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. is a bad idea when it's 103 degrees in Tennessee, which it was 103 degrees at my house 3 days in a row last week. And my green beans are still alive. With no shade cloth this year.
That's great.
Yeah. They're actually looking a little stressed about that finally. But I was doing an experiment on that bed. Like, has the increased fertility in that bed, because it's my best bed, done enough that I don't have to put shade cloth on? The answer is they would have liked some shade cloth last week.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I wonder how much of that is water stress, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Oh, all right. Well, John left us.
Yeah, I know. He's gone. He was like, I'm out, guys. We're at the end of our time, but we're not. We have 20 more minutes technically, but we don't have to take it. So if there aren't questions, we could totally tell people we're going to go have our second cup of coffee today. Yeah. BTC topic. Hodl.
End every day with more sats than you started, and don't believe the hype around Michael Saylor and strategy. It's going to go broke or whatever. He has 32 years of reserves. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
This is accumulation cycle. That's right now. This is where you should be buying double what you normally do. That's what now is with Bitcoin. And every day with more sats than you started, you'll be fine. That's
the same strategy for saving money. And every day with more money than you started.
What did they used to say? What IQ level was considered retarded? 70?
I think 75.
And then they lowered it.
They lowered it.
Because too many people were retarded.
Yeah, that's what we do. When we have a standard that's not being met, we lower the standard. That's led to a lot of problems. That's one of the chapters my book talks about, the changing ruler. And I tie that into economics. So whenever we have a problem now in the country economically, what do? We just print money and spend it, right? So that's actually become the de facto standard for everything. When the colleges outgrew the capacity of qualified students, did we increase rigor in high school? No, we lowered admission standards, right? And everywhere you look, we just lower standards. We lower physical standards. We lower mental cognitive standards. We lower every standard we have so that everybody can participate. And that whole process has just been a disaster for society.
Yeah. So the big question, though, from Debbie is, what was crawling up your wall, Jack?
You don't want to know.
Question. Was it a scorpion?
Yeah.
I was like, he didn't just squish that. He got away to not be stung when he squished that.
Yeah.
So
I walked in the other building yesterday looking for something, and there was stuff all over the place. I'm like, what the hell happened here? And I'm looking around, and I'm like, I wonder if the storm blew a door open. What was going on? And I feel something's looking at me, and I look, and I see the head of a reticulated python sitting on top of a 8-foot cage, and it's the meanest one we have. That thing, when we unboxed that, I got bit by that thing 8 or 9 times. So I'm like, hey, Cody, come out here. And he comes out. I'm like, hey, retic's out. He's like, which one? I'm like, the golden child. He's like, oh, shit. But we got him uneventful. But just thinking of things moving, because he was right by my head, just like he was right there by you.
So the thing with those guys, though, retics and Burmese both tend to be much bitery.
Yes.
Bitery as young animals, and they chill as they get older. Favorite snake, just as a display animal in the right habitat, is a rainbow boa.
Mm.
And they're the exact opposite. You get them as babies, and they're all sweet. And as they get older, they get really snappy assholes. And they're a pretty good-sized animal, so they can lay one on you pretty damn good if they want to do it.
They've got real teeth.
Well, I think anything that eats birds.
Yep, ambush predator.
Tends to be bigger teeth and a little more aggressive, because they have to be able to get through the feathers and get in. If it eats birds or fish or slimy amphibians, they tend to have bigger teeth. Like your water snakes, they're harmless, but they'll bite the shit out of you.
So
yeah, they have a mild.
In the process of catching the snake, that's what we really want to know, John.
No, I never even owned a snake hook till a couple of years ago. No, we used a big snake hook to grab them.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that thing bites a lot. Amanda bought this damn thing on an auction, and it said bad at it. I go, he's getting rid of this animal for a reason.
Yeah.
And it was. He is vicious.
You know, you look really good with it. John, you look really good with some snakeskin boots. I'm just going to say it.
You're absolutely right. And I just bought a bunch of equipment to make boots. I have a almost full cobbler accomplishment to be able to actually manufacture 100% a boot or footwear.
Because if the smaller animals that can't really do damage is bitey, that's fine. Big animals that do damage when they bite, that like to bite, I kind of look at them as like aggressive rooster.
Yeah.
You spur me once in the leg, go under the fucking tree, right? You're going to hang from the tree. You're going to become Kokovin. So, if I had a retic of size that was bitey, belt, hat, shoes, boots, something.
Yep. Red Flyer Media. I just watched a black rock squirrel walk around my. Is that what is a black in color rock squirrel or BlackRock, like
or
the company.
Is it a drone of some sort?
Is it like the is it like the ticks Black they put Rock out that had – yeah, what is a BlackRock squirrel?
I've heard of black squirrels, and I've heard of ground squirrels. I've never heard of a rock squirrel or a black rock squirrel.
Is there is a rock squirrel a thing?
Rock they use Vanguard cameras or something like you know.
It's a CIA fucking squirrel.
I mean, we have an NSI drone as a chicken on my property because she's lived many more years than is possible for her to live, and occasionally NSI like sneaks onto my property and puts a green egg in the duck coop. So.
Maybe
she's spying on us because she follows us around.
Does she recharge on power lines?
I don't know. She disappeared once for like a month and then came back. We thought she was dead and she came back.
They had to re-upload her programming.
Yeah, they had to do a software update or a hardware update. Yeah.
Red Flyer's not giving us any additional information here, man.
Yeah. Well, it's probably taking a lag time for her to get the message is what it really
probably
is.
Probably so.
And then she's got to like put down whatever she's doing and then go type an answer.
Anywhere besides the Texas hookup. We still don't know where they are.
So it must be an actual critter and not a drone.
Probably like a ground squirrel, right?
Rock Maybe. Squirrel. You know, if only one of us had typed black rock squirrel into Google and seen what happens.
They exist.
Yeah? Did you do that?
That's what I just did, yeah. Hold on. It delivers what it promises. It's a black squirrel.
It likes rocks. That's a fine-looking squirrel right there.
Well, that's one you want as a pet right there.
Make a nice little hat.
Except for what squirrels do to your house, but yeah.
You know, they taste pretty good in Brunswick stew, I bet.
I've never eaten a squirrel. Have you, John?
Oh, we're going to fucking fix
that.
Oh,
yeah, we ate everything. Every
You're
Western
gonna find
songbird.
Out what squirrel
tastes
like.
I know, I totally want to eat squirrel. My neighbor, who's our hunter neighbor, he found out I hadn't eaten a squirrel and went to his freezer to see if he could find one. But he couldn't.
Yeah.
So, and no. I haven't. We don't have squirrels on my property because we have canines.
So we didn't have squirrels the first 10 years. Not a single squirrel anywhere, and we have them now. Even with the dogs, they stay high up in the trees and kind of torment the dogs.
Hmm.
Yeah, we don't. I see them up in the woods, but not here.
I got a bunch of them around here, and the dogs are stupid now and can't get them. Like, Charlie and Max used to kill them, and Belle and Lucy they have no predatory instinct. They just run, and that doesn't work. There's no stalking. But I've been trying to convince myself that I need to shoot a few of these. And you just did that for me, Nicole.
Yeah, no, I'll be there in October. I mean, November.
The pre-gaming of the workshop, squirrel will feature in that in some way or capacity.
I hope you get David involved because then it'll be extra funny.
Yeah.
So I don't know about the crows actually protecting your flock, but I've seen a lot of videos of that also. And we never had crows here until just this year. And I actually played a crow sound, and the crows came straight to us where we were had a blaring on the phone. I've also read that if you can do it with dog food, but their favorite food is supposed to be peanuts. So if you put peanuts out for them. And I've seen probably the same videos you have where the lady feeds them and then the crow brings back a trinket and takes some peanuts. And crows are very, very smart. They can problem solve. They can put rocks in a container to raise the water level. They're pretty cool.
They can open a soft cooler and steal bait out of it. I can tell you that because that's happened. There's a video of Dorothy, like she's got a crow just screaming at her because when we were fishing in Sanibel, it did that. And then she I wrapped the cooler shut so it couldn't get it back open. And it realized you did this and it's pissed off at me because it can't get any, it was stealing raw shrimp out of the cooler. I've seen these videos now too, of several influencers that are trying to attract and befriend crows. And I'm not sure how effective that is. The lady you're talking about, did that naturally happen or did they rob a nest or something and raise a baby? And I think if you did that, ignore the fact you're probably violating game laws or some shit. If you had one or two that were really tame and you kind of let them out and they found their own murder, that they may bring, because they do, they get very, if they're not afraid that you're going to kill them, they get very unafraid of you. Like on the beach where I was talking about, those crows, as soon as somebody sets a cooler down, they land on a chair right next to it. They're like,
what's in the cooler?
Because if they see you leave, like, they're immediately on that. And, like, the trinket shit, like, you got to tell people, bro, don't leave your keys there. Like, why? Because a freaking crow will steal your keys. Especially, like, room keys because they're lightweight. They leave with room keys all the time off the beach. You'll see, like, you'll see a fly that you can see the keychain thing that they have with the room number on it. Like, oh, there goes somebody's room key.
What happened to your key, sir? Well, you're not going to believe this, but...
No, they believe you.
I'm sure they knew it happened before. The question we were answering was, does it make sense to befriend crows so they protect your chicken flock, I assume?
Yeah. They'll do it. I mean, if they're around, they hate hawks. That's one thing they will do. But I don't think they're doing it for you. It's just they're there, and there's a hawk, and we hate him. Like, it's like, you know, like... setting up an agitated group of protesters loose on something they don't understand, right? Like, that's what it really is.
There was a Instagram page, and the lady was making daily videos on her progression to befriending crows. And it started far out in the field, and she saw some crows and started putting things out that crows were supposed to like. And it did. She kept moving it in closer and closer. And I mean, it was pretty neat to watch. I lost track of it, but it's doable, I think.
If you can get them to hang out, they will have an effect. I don't doubt that. I just wonder how practical it is.
Yeah, I mean, I have dogs, so we don't have crows.
Yeah.
I don't think you have to split the tongue to get them to talk. I've heard that too, Charles. But crows, I've seen crows and ravens that do have some vocabulary, and I don't believe that you have to split the tongue for that to happen. There's a lot of protection laws, like they'll spend more time messing you up if you have a crow than they would somebody who harms children. It's absolutely baffling the amount of time to enforce some will on somebody over an animal.
But they murdered Peanut, man.
Yeah, they do. And that killed
Peanut the squirrel,
And that should have been the catalyst that kind of started the change in things.
Yeah.
If nobody reacted over the raccoon and the squirrel, then people are like, what's going to be the trigger? I don't think the trigger's coming. I don't think there's going to be one. But the crow thing, I actually looked that up a couple years ago. It is very, very difficult to get a crow or a raven in the States. But you can get – there's a magpie, and then you can have European crows. Just like we were at a reptile show last year, and a lady had a Eurasian owl. It is – I think it's one of the largest birds that you can – and you can have it. You can literally buy it. They're like $5,000. It will imprint on you. And this is like a lifetime thing. You're going to have this animal the entire
long time
of its life. But you can't have, you know, any other birds of prey. You can if you go through the Raptor Society and you apprentice and you do all of that. But these Eurasian owls, you can just buy them. And that's how the raven crow thing is. There are some European animals. Same with taxidermy. It's very, very regulated to have taxidermied crows in the United States. You can have them right up in Canada. You can have them, but you can bring
them.
That's
weird, because most states you can shoot the shit out of them.
You can, but it's the whole protection of them.
Okay.
There's a hunting season and everything for them. But for most of the people doing taxidermy and oddities trade, they're using European crows.
Well, I mean, the season on crows in Pennsylvania is July 1st to June 30th.
Yeah, I buy crow.
That's the whole year, dude.
I buy the old canvas and paper mache crow anytime I find them, but you just don't see them as much anymore. I buy all those old decoys. Yeah, the ostrich farm was pretty insane, and I guess they did end up killing all those, even after court injunction, and they tested them, and they had no bird flu. That was just some bureaucrat was going to – and what that's about, that's not about them. It's about you and me and Jack and Nicole. You guys better pay attention and do what we tell you to do, because this is what's going to happen. It just eats away the next guy. It's not about them. It's about, we said you're going to do this, and by golly, you're going to do it.
You know the memes that look like it's like the 50s or 60s and like they have the housewife with the cup of coffee or whatever? There was one of those recently that somebody put out, and it just said, yeah, exactly that look right there, Nicole. And it said, they're doing it again because you didn't hang them the last time they did it.
Like, yeah.
And I think there were, you know, there's a point where, like, will we ever hit that turning point, or have they dumbed down society and made us so comfortable in our slavery that we never will? But, like, is there a point where, like, bring the, what was the shirt you had, the Bring Back Tar and Feather? Like,
yeah.
You know, I mean, like, there That's is a tiring. Point where if you push people far enough, it's just, like, have they so neutered humanity that that point isn't there anymore? Because it doesn't take a small group. It takes, like, a critical mass. You have to get a critical mass of individuals who are like, fuck no, we're not tolerating this, where the mass is so large that authority cowers. And I just don't know if that exists anymore.
Well, I think that's the whole thing with all the flock cameras and the surveillance, right? They know that time is coming closer, and they need that, right? And without law enforcement willing to enforce their will, you know, I was just doing my job. They never could have done the lockdowns, except cops were willing to do the lockdowns, right? And who's pushing for all the flock cam? Law enforcement. Well, it might save a child, or we found a stolen car. Well, do your fucking job. Like, did you see the female officer that just got beat up in North Carolina responded, and like 5-6 dudes jumped on her? I mean, beating the shit out of her. And somebody said, well, that's a perfect example for less lethal. Kill them. Like, I'm surprised she didn't come out and actually shoot one of them.
Yeah.
And this happens more and more and more and more and more. Yeah. And I actually said that on Facebook. That was my reply. And I got a strike this morning on Facebook for saying that. I haven't had a reprimand on Facebook in years.
Yeah, you will.
YouTube, on the other hand, he's really good at pissing off.
Yeah. You know, I look at it this way. If I'm armed and you're physically attacking me, you know I'm armed, which if you're a cop, then
you're
getting shot because I have a moral obligation. There is a weapon present. I happen to be in possession of it. If you take me out, you now have possession of my weapon.
Well, they all of a sudden have
weapons. Who knows who else you're going to hurt? The minute you tell me that your thing you want is more important than my life, we're talking about a lifetime membership in the Dirt Nap Society. That's where that's headed.
They found a bunch of Glocks with switches, a bunch of full auto Glocks. Dude had a spear. They found a fucking a spear, like a big spear. They took a lot of weapons out of there. And I'm not a for the cop dude. Like I am really not. I don't want any law enforcement. I don't call cops. I don't expect them to show up. I don't need them interacting in my day-to-day life. Yeah. But that shit's out of hand. If it, like, what do you think if you backed up 15, 20 years ago, or when any of us were youngsters, if we even thought about, like, you know, putting hands on law enforcement? I mean, you would expect it to be beat to a pulp or
if you're not ended. Shot, you're gonna get a shit beat out of you. And I also look at it this way: like, whenever I see a thing that involves a cop shooting somebody, what would I have done in that scenario? Understanding certain things are not open to them. So, like, if you're a cop and they say, go find out what this person's doing, you can't look at that person and go, nah, I'm not going to do it. Like, you have to engage them. And if they do certain things, then you have to restrain them, where I'm not going to try to restrain somebody. But at the point where it goes kinetic, if that was me, would I have shot them? Okay, so they're not supposed to shoot them because they're a cop? If I would have done it, then I judge them on the same standard I would judge myself or any other person. They're not wrong because they're in a uniform, right? What did they do under what circumstances for what reasons? And of course, that means you're a bootlicker and your breath smells like kiwi or whatever. Like, I think we've gone too far and I think that's the plan, right? If you spread people out enough, then there's no unity. And therefore, as soon as anybody says anything that's 1% off, they all start throwing shit at each other. And again, now you're not paying attention to the people creating the actual problem.
Well, the other thing you do well, Jack, is you'll break that down on your show where you're like, I looked at the camera angles and we don't know about the things that came out after.
Yeah.
What we know is where that person was standing and what they saw. And the closest we can get is this angle. And if you saw that, what would you do? You don't have the 16 other replay angles like they do in football that you get after an incident.
No, that person has to make that decision with the information they have in that moment, knowing if I don't act, I could die or somebody else could die. And you have to judge it on what's being seen and the totality of the why behind it. But you can't be like, well, actually, his hand wasn't really. No, fuck that shit, because you weren't there. Right. Like, this is not the World Cup where we can, you know, slow replay it and go, oh, that was intentional or that was not intentional. And I think there's another side of this too. Like, there is a basic like survival instinct that people are tuning out because they think they're freaking Marvel superheroes now and shit. Like, when you, I don't care if the guy's right or wrong. When you have three dudes that are armed with guns telling you to fucking not do something, and you're like, fuck you, I'm going to do it anyway. You know, you might get freaking some holes in you from that. Even if you're right, you're still dead. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Watch the video. It's easy to find. It'll probably target you now because we've spoken about it.
Of course.
But you'll see. It's pretty wild that she did not go to gun, but she didn't. Joe says, most Americans are too apathetic and comfortable. It's absolutely that comfort, right? Comfort and amusement and entertainment. When PlayStations and video consoles came around, inner city youth, crime within gangs and those areas. I think it was cited. Los Angeles was one of them. Atlanta, there was a couple others, Chicago. Crime rate dropped by like 50% over an 18-month period. And when they talked about it and they looked at it, and the FBI statistics over the next 6 or 7 years said it was because of game consoles. As long as they had power and entertainment, they weren't outside. When did riots and stuff happen? When power went out, when it was extremely hot. That's when your riots would always pop off. But the game, it goes back to the amusement and entertainment. They are too complacent because we are too comfortable.
I was reading an article about the crime rate being the lowest it's been in a long time this year so far, for murders specifically. And, you know, it bumped up after 2020, and then it's gone back down again. So some of it is, I wonder how much of this stuff we see because we can see everything instantly. And it's, again, it's that cherry pick of all the stuff to make us angry and get our eyeballs.
Sure. I mean, why am I talking about it? Because I saw it on this.
Yeah.
And they always talk about the thing that's happening over there where you don't see it. So you feel like there's a lot more of it than there is. Yep. Like during COVID, we had family members that were from New York. Texas is really bad, isn't it? Like, no. Well, I saw on TV. Yeah, but I live here.
Yeah, the death clock.
Right. Or like all these people from the World Cup that are coming to the Europeans and all, they're coming to the United States for World Cup. They're like, this is nothing like we thought it was. Right? This is nothing like we thought. Like, they thought, like, people were getting shot like every 5 minutes. Somebody's just getting shot in the street. Like, people are just driving around just randomly shooting people or something. Like, and you can't get any medical care. And all our food is McDonald's or whatever. Like, they're like, this place is awesome. And that scenario is run over and over and over again. You always talk about how bad these people who you don't see really are, and then you get some collective, like a collage of these bad things happening, and you show it to people, and that feels like the only thing that's happening. And when you're like, I don't see that, well, it's over here. Well, if it's over there, then that's those people's problem. I think we do need a little bit more of that, too, like, well, then that's their problem. Why don't they fix it? And maybe it's because they don't actually have a problem that you're being told that they have, right? Like the virus stuff is like the perfect case study of that. They'll tell you about this thing and it's deadly and you're going to die. And when you research it, you're like,
how am I even going to get that?
Run over by a car crossing the street when I obeyed the stoplight than I am to get this rare, disease that's going to kill me.
Ebola.
Yeah, Ebola. Yeah, there's two cases.
Every summer it's Ebola. I'm like, I'm going to start writing down the day I hear about the Ebola outbreak that's going to kill me.
Yeah.
And see if it's the same date every year or within a week.
I bet you it's within a week.
Yeah, and I mean, not discounting that it's awful to die of Ebola, but the chances of you and me dying of it here are pretty low.
Yeah, when people die here, we bury them. We don't throw them in a ditch and let them rot and let the lions eat them and let shit run through our streets. So we probably have a little less communicable disease risk here than where this happens all the time.
Yeah, there's a morning briefing somewhere. They're like, Ebola didn't work. Roll out space aliens.
Monkey
space
pox.
Aliens didn't work. Let's roll out monkeypox. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, how about monkeypox? I looked. I was like, what is monkeypox? How do you get it? I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to get that.
Well, how do you?
Pretty much,
there's one thing.
There's
involved in all the
fantasy bit about AIDS from the 80s that I can't say here that would cover monkeypox pretty well.
Fluid exchange. We'll just put it that way.
Yeah.
Fluid exchange.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
a 14-year-old little boy showed up. Well, then you need to arrest an adult because that's where
that's exactly
from.
What you need to be.
Yeah, let's get the pedophile.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, crazy.
I think we're at 2 hours here.
Yeah, we're time for once around the horn. I'm going to end on, I'd like to do the last one. It's going to be a little somber. So, John, why don't you go first?
SOE Tactical Gear is the name of my website. You can check it out. We manufacture all kinds of products. We do a t-shirt every week. We almost never rerun that. I do a live every night at 9 o'clock on my YouTube channel. Super easy to find. If you like any of my content, anything I said here today, you can follow me on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. We're pretty active there. And I don't know, we've got over 7,000 videos on YouTube.
Jack, you go.
Yeah, I wanted to share something a little different today. My main site is survivalpodcast.com, but jackslaws.com is where you can learn about my books, my AI courses, and stuff like that. And I just want to do a little mutual celebration here with the audience and you guys. My newest book, Laws of Life Book 2, Now Build a System for Your Life, was an Amazon bestseller at least last week and still on some lists this week. We hit number one new release in entrepreneurship and number one new release in time management for business. On Amazon. Woo! As an independent author last week. That was pretty good. So thank you to everybody that picked up a copy. And I would just say, if you like what you hear here and you want to build a better life, consider picking up a copy. Laws of Life Book 2, Now Build the System for Your Life. And, of course, it's a series of books, so you can get the first one as well. And we do have workbooks coming out. We'll have workbooks out by the end of this month. And, I mean, formally printed and edited and formatted and all that other stuff. So.
All right. Well, I have a little bit of a somber note today. We have a member of one of our communities passed away over the weekend, and he was in the SOE community, in my community, and the Self-Reliance Festival community, and I can't add that to the stage, Jack, so I don't know if you can.
Oh, I can. Hold on.
Anyway, it was a sudden death of John Davis, who, if you ever came to Self-Reliance Festival, he was running the board, and that's a picture of him with his wife, Trish, and their daughter. Really awesome guy. And so there's been a fundraiser launched for him at Give, Send, Go, and his name is John Davis. If you go to any of our pages, like John shared it this morning on SOE, or yesterday on SOE, I've shared it. We're trying to raise some money for her to get through. She has to now suddenly move to another location to help her through that process and the funeral, because this was, you know, not something expected at such a young age. So if you got a little extra this month, support John and definitely do your best to share. If you have memories of him, share a memory, because I think it's really nice for folks who've lost somebody to read the impact that he has had. So anyway, Plumber Mickey says he's the first person I met at SRF. So rather than promoting my stuff, I'd just love it if this month you guys do something to support Trish as she goes through a pretty hard time. Anyway, we will see you guys next month.
They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month. And you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.